Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Oh, it's got to be a penalty. Is it? It is a penalty to Liverpool. It was a high foot from Gael Clichy, who came flying in chest height on Roberto Firmino inside the penalty area.
That's a clear pen.
Well, Willy Caballero saved three penalties against Liverpool last year in the League Cup final, but James Milner, the former City player, has scored all six penalties he's taken for Liverpool this season.
I was just about to ask you that.
The boos ring out. Milner in front of the City supporters. Milner steps up, right-footed, and scores for Liverpool into the bottom left-hand corner. Fernandinho sprays it out to De Bruyne on that right wing. First-time ball into Aguero! There is the equaliser! He missed one moments ago. He wasn't going to miss again. The ball low and powerful along the ground from De Bruyne. And Sergio Aguero always scores against Liverpool at this stadium. And he's done it again. It's Manchester City 1, Liverpool 1.
Here is Jurgen Klopp talking about how his team he thinks deserved a win.
It's really difficult to play them, but again, we did it. We did well. So am I proud about the performance? Yes, of course. But unfortunately, maybe I'm a lucky guy and I have a few nicer moments in my life. But it's a good moment actually, and it's very important for us that we again gave this sign to all the people who are interested in us that we can really perform like this. I know. That's really not easy. Otherwise, all the teams would do it. Bleds did really well. So I'm fine with this, how I said. I thought I can change it. Maybe I'm not right, but I thought we would have deserved to win a little bit more. And could have, but it's all okay. I had to accept different and more absolute worse results in my life. And so I'm really okay. Nobody has to worry about me. But nice game to watch, probably, but on the sideline, it's really hard work, and on the pitch, it's outstanding hard work. And obviously, it was really hard work for both teams.
There we go. That was the assessment of Jurgen Klopp. We'll bring you some of what Guardiola was saying in a few moments' time. Pat Nevin is listening in. We're really nailing our throwing to audio on the show, as you've been hearing, Pat.
No, Jill, just going quiet. Just to wind you up. Sorry about that.
I was going home if you weren't there.
No, I was enjoying the start anyway. funnily enough, a lot of things going wrong for a lot of the teams at the moment as well. Is Arsene Wenger producing the show tonight?
He's catching, yeah.
But what a great game it was. I just watched that one on the telly. I'd been to the United Borough game earlier in the day, and I got back in time to see the most of the City-Liverpool game, and it was extraordinary. It was brilliant. Even on TV, I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. Incredibly open. Hate to be the referee in that one. How many penalties did you call in that one, Kev?
Well, I said it to Joe, and do you know the instance? You know when you sat in the commentary booth and you're getting the replay sent through after the incident, whatever it would be, whether it would be a tackle, whether it would be a chance. They weren't cut into replays. You couldn't analyse any of the real incidents because there was that much happening. It was a continuous flow of the game. Unless it actually was a stoppage in play, it was so difficult, as you say, not least the referee. How the referee was trying to get those decisions so accurate yesterday. It's one of those days where you just, maybe the referee has to hold his hands up and think, I literally, this is beyond me at times because the pace in the game was that quick.
Yeah, and it was kind of, I don't think he was guessing them. And I think he made the right decisions in that. If he's not sure it's a penalty, you don't give it.
Yeah.
Full stop. And, you know, I'll applaud plenty of referees for that. You might miss it. If you miss it, you've missed it. Tough luck. We can't help you there. Your assistant's in a better position. He should have helped you, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, when they were missing them, you know, you sometimes get yourself in a bad position. Tough one to referee. Really, really hard game to referee. I mean, I was at the, again, last week, last Monday, I was at the Chelsea-Man United game. And that was a tough old one to referee as well because the subtleties of that one, particularly the sending off. So at the moment, I mean, I'm always shouting like a vast majority of people at the moment for, you know, video technology to be used. But there's a hell of a lot of the ones at the moment. I mean, I heard you even talking about the penalty kick that was given there. And then when you watch that again, there was a touch in that, wasn't there? Mm. But I would still give a penalty for that one, definitely.
Who was the better team, Pat?
You remember I missed the first 30 odd minutes of it because I was driving back from Middlesbrough. And I thought Liverpool looked absolutely fantastic until they scored the goal. And then Manchester City looked a better team after that.
He's probably right that Pike was. First 20 minutes, City were excellent. City was so good in the first 20, 25 minutes. Mm. And then the second half of the first half, Liverpool came on really strong. They looked such a threat going forward, yeah.
Any discernible reason for those shifts? Or just the ebb and flow of the game?
I think it was a bit like that. Liverpool, I actually think they looked a little bit nervy at the start of the match. They weren't passing crisply enough. I think they were quite slack in possession. And they were almost trying to contain City. I spoke to you earlier about Liverpool defending quite narrow. Both Milner and Klein came very narrow, which is unlike Liverpool. And I think it was by and large just to try to... I think he envisaged the system that City had been playing with De Bruyne and Silva playing as just outside number 10s. I think he envisaged them playing like that. But because De Bruyne dropped a bit deeper, Liverpool weren't able to get forward and City were enjoying a lot of possession early on.
Another big thing happened as well. He took Yaya Touré off. And when Yaya Touré went off, oh, they've got some legs in the midfield now, because you've never seen a gasket go.
I was saying that to Kev in the first hour of the show. The 5 minutes before Yaya Touré was taken off are comedy gold.
Yeah, they are. I mean, you're trying to see him vaguely attempting to chase people. And actually, we've all done it in games before where you're going past somebody and you think, you can't run. So you actually deliberately run quite close past them just to almost wind them up.
Neville on the commentary kept going, they've got to get him off. They've got to get him off right now.
There was a couple. I mean, having said that, I think he was trying to get him off about 2 or 3 minutes before he did come off. But, you know, we've seen Yaya before when he's, you know, not bothered to track back. But this time, he was trying to track back and it just wasn't happening. Now, having said that, they bring Fernando into the middle, the park there. He's got the legs and the energy. And, of course, the big thing about Liverpool, because of the high tempo play they play all the time, they almost always fade at the end of games anyway. So Manchester City would have known that and knew that they get sort of, it certainly get a much more of the play in the latter stages of the game away from home, because the one thing that Liverpool rarely do, even in away games, they don't sit and hold, you know, and I applaud them for that. Well done, it's great, but they kind of pay the price for it now and again.
Yeah, here's Guardiola, fingers crossed, and he was talking about this being one of the best days of his career.
It's one of the days of my career. Like a manager, I am proud the most. So after our defeat in a Champions League, where these 2 days we were so sad, and in the training sessions the people don't talk too much, arrive here after 1 week, but all the season they have not European competition, Liverpool, so 1 week to prepare that game. And how we fight, how we run, how we put our spirit there. So today is one of the happiest days of my life like a manager. And the way we played, of course, we can concede some chances, but we create again more than the opponent, like Chelsea game, Tottenham game. Like all the teams, we create more chances, but it's our problem. So our problem is that we don't score goals when it's on easy goals. And when that's happened, it's nothing to do. It just at least show that spirit that we didn't show in the first half in Monaco. That's why we are out.
Not to overstate the quality on show, because, you know, Pep Guardiola has overseen maybe the best team any of us have ever seen. But the game, there was that moment about 12, 13 minutes in, you would have missed it, Pat, where Guardiola and Klopp are about, I think Guardiola's about to lose his head and go mad at something, some tackle, and in the end just kind of burst into a high five of Klopp, and they just kind of, they're both wound up as they so often tend to be. The game in many ways, notwithstanding the issues with quality, but was like the realisation of their vision for football in 2017.
I'd add something on top of that, though.
Go on.
I know exactly where you're going, and I exactly agree with it, because both teams, incredibly open football, playing at high tempo, good technical stuff, all that.
Yeah.
Married to English football, you know, and the fact that you've got the passion of English football as well, and both teams having that passion. And I think that's maybe, if you're going to give them an excuse for saying one of the happiest days, you know, if you've done Barcelona, you've done Bayern, it's quite clinical with Bayern, it's sometimes far too easy with Barcelona. But then you come to something like this, you get what you think is a really good technical level, then you add the English Premier League passion to it. I think that's where he got a real buzz. I mean, that's what struck me about why he was so excited afterwards.
And isn't the interesting thing, we have two foreign managers, well, non-English managers and a bunch of non-English players, and they're playing quote-unquote English football. So it actually does suggest it boils down to, more than anything else, the atmosphere.
Yeah, it can be. And by the way, it's not always the greatest atmosphere in that stadium, but it was on that occasion. Oddly enough, just talking about the last few weeks, I've seen some fantastic atmospheres, and Kevin, you're at plenty of games, I'm at plenty of games, and we have to be honest about it. The atmosphere isn't always great. A hell of a lot of Premier League games. But in the last couple of weeks, I was at the Celtic Rangers game, at that Chelsea Manchester United game, the atmosphere was phenomenal. Mm. Absolutely off the scale. This one seemed like it as well. So it's, obviously the English games, the Premier League at its best. Team, when things really matter, the battle for the top six is fantastic as well. And you add all them things together, and yeah, it is the whole thing together. It doesn't always come together. In fact, it's pretty rare, to be fair. I go to a lot of games in the Premier League each season. But the last couple of weeks, it's been a real buzz.
I don't want to pour water over the fire, but listening to you yesterday, Joe. Joe was in studio yesterday with Stephen Kenny talking about coaches and how they go about things. Is what Guardiola and Klopp doing, though, Pat? Do you think, is it destined to fail, though? Ultimately, will it fail? Entertaining, yes. But history would suggest that playing this way, you won't win the Premier League.
Correct. Absolutely correct. Oddly enough, watching the United game, do you know the system? I don't know how closely you watched the last two games that United played. Both of the teams have played, there have been a variety of teams where they've played 6-2-2. That's been their system, 6-2-2. In the end, you have to have the ability to do that now and again in the Premier League. And you watch Chelsea, the way they're killing it just now. When they lose it, they have at least five. When they've won the game, they've just got five at the back and two in front and just kill it, absolutely stone dead. There's not many teams. How many teams can you remember in the history of the Premier League have won the Premier League with anything less than an extremely good, well-organised, well-structured defence? It kind of is so rare to happen. It's weird. Even you got to see Leicester. I thought they were brilliantly organised last season. They didn't. They weren't. We talk about the fact that they broke well, but hey, they needed to be a hell of a good defence. And I suppose the proof of the pudding is what you're asking there is, what two teams have lost the least amount of goals this season? Chelsea, Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
Both lost 21 goals each. They are 1-2 in the league.
Yeah.
It's not a fluke that. Okay, they're miles ahead of everyone else.
Yeah, you watched that game yesterday. Klopp and Guardiola will never embrace that premise.
No, and I've got to say, and I spoke about it with you and you and Pat over the last few weeks, City have been brilliant to watch. I go back to my point before, if I'm a kid watching football, watching these teams, you're hooked for life on this type of football, because this is how you want to play. You want it to be entertaining. You want there to be goals. You want them to be chances. You want it to have everything, and that's the way that they play. So Guardiola won't change. He won't. And I think
you see one thing, Kev. Could we not? If you don't put that amount of defenders back there, you get John Stones. But say if you had an absolute world class centre back alongside him, and you basically say, right, we're going 1-1. It'll work. It'll be fine. That's what he did with Barcelona.
Yeah.
You just say we'll go 1-1 at the back all the time. Yeah, we'll lost the third goal, but that'll be fine because we've got brilliant players who can score goals. But he can't do that when the defenders aren't good enough. Mm. And I don't think they are good enough at the very top level.
Speaking of Stones, Guardiola was talking about him in his press conference.
John Stones had more personality than all of us here together in this room. More balls than everyone here, guys. So, and I like that player. I love. With under pressure, the people criticize him, the people say, he went there and play again, and when I play, when we talk, when we talk. So I am delighted to have John. With all his huge amount of mistakes they have, I love him. I love this kind of guys with this personality. Because it's not easy to play centre defender with this manager. It's not easy.
He's ruffling the microphone there when he says the word balls, because he's flinging his arms out towards the media, and it's Kevin and I were saying earlier, it's one of the first times he's almost acknowledged how difficult life as a centre half under Guardiola is.
Yeah, can we use the word man crush at this point in time? And it is a bit of that. And I have to say, I fully understand it. I absolutely fully get it. I don't think he wants Stones in there on his own, and he's not had enough help over the season. But he's the one he'll keep on going back to. And there's a number of times in the game. How many times did you see Stones just basically striding into midfield? Striding forward, asking different questions of the opposition. And it's the classic British thing, a very British thing of saying, you've just got to kick the ball at the Rose Head. The amount of teams now that are trying to pass it out now from what we would consider historically ridiculous positions, taking mad chances, and you think, why? Well, you know why? Because if you go and try and close up that high and you do pass around them, you have got a free run after that, and he wants his teams to be good enough to do that. Problem is, Stones is good enough, but there's not many around him that are good enough. And he, everyone has a go at Stones, and I think he feels possibly. I feel quite similarly. Yeah.
Do you know what, Pat? I think it's essentially from listening to Guardiola over the last few weeks. I don't think he actually sees them as defenders. He sees them as players to start attacks for them. That is essentially what it is.
Including the keeper.
Yeah, including the keeper. He spoke there about the mistakes that he makes. I don't think he gives a monkey's about what John Stones is doing defensively at times. It's about how he's implementing his plan and how he's starting attacks going forward.
The only thing is, you can do that if you're a Manchester City manager, your name's Pep Guardiola and you've got everyone behind you.
Yeah.
You try to do that somewhere else.
Oh, totally.
You're sacked. Yeah. You're out the door within 2 minutes and it's just not accepted. And that's where ourselves who talk about the game, we need to be honest about this as well. Do we treat different people differently just because of who they are, where they come from? Or, you know, if David Moyes is trying to do the same thing, do we absolutely batter him to death? If Sam tries to do that, do we batter him to death? But it's okay for Jurgen and it's okay for Guardiola because they've got better players and they've got a hell of a lot of money and they can get away with it a little bit more. I think we need to be honest about that sometimes and just say, right, you got it right, you got it right, you got it right. Oh, you got it wrong that time. And the classic line, you go the whole other way, which many people want to go, is, remember, I don't know if you remember the Jose Mourinho one. He was asked a long time ago. It was a massive score. And I was thinking about it when the 5-3, then the 6-all result comes with Manchester City against Monaco. And he said that is not a football game. That is hockey.
One last thing I wanted to ask you about on Guardiola. Jonathan Wilson wrote a piece about him in the last number of days. It was in The Guardian. It was in the Sunday Independent as well over here. And it was just, I mean, it's nothing massively new. I'm sure you're very familiar with it. So it's about Guardiola's philosophy, his basic theory of play. And he divides the pitch into 20 sections. Not all the sections are the same size. For instance, the lines that mark the penalty area, they're extended for the full length of the pitch. There's vertical lines marking the sides of the six-yard box, which are picked up again at the edge of the 18-yard box. It's very hard to describe it on radio. Kev, you can see a picture of it there. Yeah. I've just held it up. But anyway, the point is there are 20 of these various sized boxes, zones on the pitch. And just at its most simplest level, and there are a number of rules, but for instance, the zone principle means that no more than three players are in a line horizontally across a pitch. So three is the maximum you want horizontally across a pitch. And vertically, you want no more than two in front of each other. And if a player moves into a zone, that means four are suddenly horizontal across the pitch. One of the other three has to automatically move. And the same if more than two get in line with each other vertically. And so I read all this, and then I was trying to watch the Manchester City-Liverpool game last night through that prism. One, it's very tiring to try and keep count, and you can't fully do it on television. But two, I was wondering, this all sounds amazingly impressive and new age, but if you didn't tell a group, or if you, in your day, Kev, or your day, Pat, how many of these rules are players, I wonder, just kind of following anyway, and they're just happening anyway. Players are making angles, and if you pressed pause at any point, it wouldn't actually be that different to what Guardiola is trying to nail down.
So you spoke this again yesterday to Stephen Kenny, and Stephen Kenny,
he's the Dundalk manager.
So you put it right how Stephen said it as well. It the way that the piece has been written, it's like it's incredibly technical how the piece is written. Yeah. What was the other word that he used as well? Incredibly scientific. Yeah. It's not necessarily the case like that. It's difficult to implement. It's difficult to coach them. But once it's done, it's not necessarily. And as Stephen Kenny said, it's about angles. It's about creating the angle. Yeah. It's about creating passing opportunities for a teammate. Mm. So a player, when he's in possession of the ball, he'll have two or three passes and things like that. That's essentially what it is.
Yeah. I wonder how instinctive it is, Pat.
It's incredibly instinctive if you're a brilliant player.
Right.
And if you've got, you know, that's why what they learned when they're youngsters at Barcelona, they learned not those big lines, but where to position yourself.
And they're doing it at City now, Pat. They're doing it through, that structure's been in City's academy now for the last 4 or 5 years.
Right.
So it's been set now through City from ages 6 and 7 now, essentially, yeah.
It's not made up. You know, they know what they're doing. I don't know if you've ever come across a book called Soccermatics by a guy called David Sumpter, and it is that level of sophistication and complication. And he wasn't sort of driving it as an idea. He just took the computer models of what they were doing. And I've probably mentioned one of the things before about it. I mean, one of the things they use is this slime theory. And it's a really hard thing to explain, but I'll try very quickly. If you put all the big towns in Japan down, right? And you put some slime down in a dish, and then you put a little bit of the slime between each of these cities, and then you put it in the fridge, and then you bring it out the next day. You found that they'll find a pathway to each of the different cities. And if you look at the pathways in the Japanese underground, it's exactly that pathway. Those pathways are obvious. Those pathways are actually natural. People find naturally the right ways to find these angles. And he managed to do this and show this with the way that Barcelona played at their very, very best.
Right.
They know the precise pathways and the precise angles to go. Now, they're not, we done it in the most simplistic ways early on, and I used to find it quite simplistic but sensible. We used to do it in triangles. You know, it's an easy one to do it. You do it in triangles. Everyone can know where the different option is, but they don't do it in that, and they also break out into those areas. And those areas were, and this because telling you about, they were absolutely there. And this was 2 years ago. I was studying this and interviewing the chap about this, and it is actually quite brilliant. Boy, it's hard to implement, and you need to give them game knowledge. And game knowledge is the hardest thing to give players, because you need to give them it from the age of, what, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Mm.
Or else you can't go and say, right, okay, you're 22 now, we're going to learn this now. Very, very hard to take it on board after them. Hence, back to your first point, there's not a lot of British players playing there.
Yeah. So how many Premier League teams, when you watch them, look to be following those rules?
No, none of them. That's Man City are trying to do it. That's about it.
Right.
I think there's a little bit of... I don't think they, even Liverpool, are necessarily going that. The rest of them are very much more structured.
Right, okay. And what about across the continent?
I think it was only really Barca, and he tried to bring a little bit of an into Bayern as well.
Right.
It's one method, and then others will take little parts of those methods on board. But it's really hard because you need to... some guys, you're going to get a big lumpy centre-back, and you can... talk to him till the cows come home. He's not going to get that. He's not going to do that. But I'll tell you, John Stones can do it. Mm. He's comfortable with it. He will find that. By the way, we're talking about the best. I don't know if, Kev, you were looking at very closely. I thought the best pass in the game came from Manchester City's goalkeeper. He was under pressure at one point, and he played a 35-yard ball over three players with a little bit of a bend on it. I thought, yeah, this is different. This is really different.
Mm. We've got to move off... Man City and Liverpool. Best players on the pitch, though, for you, Kev? I know you loved Silva.
David Silva, I thought he was magnificent yesterday. I do. I was slightly surprised that Sadio Mane was given man of the match. I think he looked dynamic. I think he looked good at times, but I just think his final ball probably let him down at times, a little bit sloppy. I thought Emre Can actually played well for Liverpool yesterday. I thought he had good spells. One of the better games I would have seen him play, but I thought the best player on the pitch was David Silva. He was magnificent.
Thank you for saying that, by the way, because I gasped when it wasn't given to Silva for what I'd seen of it. But then again, talking of man crushes, I'm
picking. Oh my God.
He's brilliant.
He should have a restraining order on you.
No.
you were watching Stoke-Chelsea as well, Pat, were you?
Yeah, I had to go and watch that and afterwards, and just go through it and sort of technically take it apart a little bit. Really quite interesting what Chelsea did in the end. I mean, classically, they're 1-1, they're against Stoke, That's not bad. You've got a big gap at the top of the league. Maybe that's okay. And he doesn't. He changes it near the end and decides to, I'll say go for it. That's maybe pushing it a little bit. But really tries to adapt his tactics and ask different questions. And they ended up, he gets the 3 points off. And you kind of, I was quite surprised at it, really, because most of the times when Conte's changed it of late, it's been just to kill the game near the end, usually because they're ahead. And this one, he had to stick a twist and... as if he thought, well, I can take a chance now, and I'll take a little bit of a chance now. He took it, and it worked for him. It's maybe a little bit of luck involved, but they were the better team. Chelsea were certainly a better team, and they are playing with stupendous amounts of confidence just now. They absolutely not to believe in that man. It's controlling them, and believe me, it's not as complex as what Guardiola tried to tell them. Believe me, but it's working a treat just now.
I think the weekend it was like that, though, wasn't it? Because Stoke were quite brutal against them at times. Stoke were very physical, went up to make the game a total battle against Chelsea.
Yeah.
One or two really heavy challenges going in, but they stood up to that.
I thought Stoke maybe crossed a little bit of a line, to be honest. It was really just trying to kick lunks out of them. And any time they could leave a stud in or go in, just that few percentage points over what's reasonable force or even tough force in a tackle.
Yeah,
they did.
That's not unknown for Stoke.
No, I know it's not. I know it's not. But I thought it was very admirable the way Chelsea handled it.
Well, look, a couple of the reports I read about it right afterwards were saying that Diego Costa was up to his old tricks again. And it always makes me sigh a little bit because he'll get kicked six times. And then if he has the slightest bit of retaliation, oh, he's up to his old tricks again.
Yeah.
You know, you test the patience of a saint. I mean, having said that, he get nothing in comparison to what Hazard got the week before against Manchester United. I mean, it's British football. It's a contact sport, you know. And if you know you're not good enough, or you need to be as physical as you can within the rules and keep as close as you can to the edge of that. And yeah, they do sometimes go over the top. You know they go over the top, but teams have tried that against Chelsea this season. I mean, United tried it there in the FA Cup a little bit to some degree. I remember West Ham had a right good physical go a couple of weeks ago as well. It seems to be having no impact whatsoever in Chelsea.
Having worked with him for a while now, if there's one thing, Pat, which makes Kevin Coban bang a table, scream, look at him, and laugh his head off, it's Diego Costa when he's just in someone's face and up to no good. nothing makes you happier than...
Ah, I do love
you love him.
That's my man crush, don't you? I think he just brings so much to a team, and particularly at the weekend when he was getting kicked lumps out of him, he just stood up to the test again, and even though he's not scored... And you'd maybe look at him, you think, but he did some brilliant things in the game again. He takes some punishment as well, and he's very, very brave. I love him in the air. I love him with his back to goal, how he'll take the ball. Even when he gives it away at times, he's as brave as you like him,
Can I tell you a wee quick story about him? Recently, it was last week, and they're all a bit daft, and they've got kind of really good rapport in that dressing room, clearly. And at a training ground, it's him and Louise, obviously, the two mad cases. And they're always doing stupid things all the time. Anyway, they got this idea to throw water and stuff over the top of a number of the players where they weren't watching, you know, that bucket dump thing they used to get in the NFL. And they'd done it to a couple, and they'd done it to, you know, I think they'd had a go at having a go at John Terry as well. And then a camera had caught them sneaking up behind the manager. And you could see in the face thinking, you dare, you dare. And he bottled it. He absolutely bottled it. Last minute, you know, just turned away. And he wouldn't have bottled it with anyone else. Now, it's kind of the story in there somewhere. Mm. Finally, somebody he absolutely has got enough respect for.
Brilliant. Pat, thanks a million. We'll talk to you next week.
Pleasure. Look forward to it.
Pat and Evan there. We'll bring you Martin O'Neill's thoughts in Dublin today next.
Off the Ball.
Home of Wednesday night rugby with Woody and Jerry.
On News Talk 106 to 108.
So Martin O'Neill in just a moment, but we just wanted to finish off on the Premier League by mentioning Arsenal. They're sixth in the table now, 6 points behind fourth place Liverpool, although they do have two games in hand. They're sort of in free fall. Wenger, I mentioned at the top of the show, told the TV interviewer before the game that 47% of West Brom's goals this season had come from set pieces. He had been studying, and so his team had prepared accordingly. And obviously, you know, you were there. Things didn't really work out as he'd been hoping. So afterwards in the press conference, naturally he's quizzed once again about his future.
Don't worry, I will. I know what I will do in my future, so you will soon know, and very soon. Yeah, you will see. I don't think that today I do not necessarily worry about that. You know, we are in a unique bad patch that we never had in 20 years, you know. We lose game after game at the moment, and that is for me much more important than my future. No, the way than fighting and do it until the last game of the season. And then if it's not good enough, we have to take the consequences.
On Match of the Day, Danny Murphy and Alan Shearer seem to interpret this as he's more likely to go because if he was going to stay and sign his contract, he would have just signed it. Whereas those comments, they felt suggested he was... going. But all the reports today in the last 24 hours, all of them seem to point towards Wenger's. he's thought about it and he thinks two more years would be about right. So that's where we are. Do you think Shearer said on Match of the Day, he sort of, you know, drew the kind of broad picture. The team are in free fall. Wenger's getting a lot of criticism. So this was almost, from a player's point of view, a referendum on how much they want their manager, how much they want to play their manager. And Shearer said it was an overwhelming no. We're not that bothered about him. I don't know how fair that is. Would the players agree with that? But that was Shearer's take. Did you feel like the attitude was wanting? Like the players gave up at any point? Or were they just, you know, usual Arsenal story done with some set piece?
Yeah. Once the third went in, yes, it felt that way.
Right.
It felt that was it. Down tools and whatever phrase you want to use, but they certainly didn't play with any real purpose, with and without the ball. First half, you know, anyone can probably shut their eyes and imagine West Brom playing. You know how they're going to line up. It was a 4-5-1 system. Both Chadley and James McLean, who was excellent, playing alongside the midfield three. So it was difficult for Arsenal to break them down. But Arsenal's movement of the ball was quite slow. It was a bit lethargic. They had loads of possession. But the amount of times that West Brom, one pass, opening them up, like literally going one-on-one, having one-on-ones, that was the most alarming thing, I think, watching Arsenal and how vulnerable they actually looked, and the amount of times that Koscielny and Mustafi, the two centre-halves, were going back towards their own goal. So,
were they still the better side?
No, they weren't the better side. No, West Brom did a job on them. West Brom did a good professional job on them. They looked comfortable defensively. Johnny Evans was superb right in the heart of West Bromwich Albion's defence. And in front of them, Fletcher again, excellent. Livermore, excellent. Chris Brunt, excellent. They just did the job. They did a brilliant job. And I mentioned James McLean because so often when you've seen Arsenal at the best over the last couple of years, it's Bellerin. Bellerin's been the one that's been bombing forward. And James McLean dealt with him. He had him running back towards his own goal the other way. Hector Bellerin couldn't deal with James McLean physically the way it looked to me. So that was certainly the one positive sign ahead of this Wales game this week, yeah.
Wenger did say he'd let us know very soon, so...
Yeah. Well, that was saying with that looks the reports anyway.
Yeah.
From the reports, as you say, there.
It's the first time there's been such widespread reports saying the same thing.
It felt Saturday like an end. Do you know what I mean? It was very vocal. The Arsenal fans away from home were very vocal, very visible. You could see with the banners. It was more banners than I'd ever seen. And it just feels like if Wenger's to turn it from here, that would be one of the best managerial. Achievements ever.
There was speculation in the press room with some sources that maybe the In Wenger We Trust plane banner had been organised by the Arsenal board.
That was mentioned as well, yeah. That's, I don't know. I don't know how true
unconfirmed,
that is. Unconfirmed reports, yeah.
Those musings were there in the press room, which, if it's come to that...
Which overflowed to Arsenal the following... to City the day after as well. It was mentioned there as well again,
okay.
24 hours later, yeah.
In the press room.
Yeah.
Interesting. So Martin O'Neill in Dublin, the team have flown in from the various clubs and the injury list is getting worryingly long. So O'Neill asked in the press conference about the growing injury list ahead of the game.
How long have you got? It's the lengthiest list of injuries that I've known since my times here, since I've come into the job. And unfortunately it's happened at a real crucial time for us. However, other players will have to step up and just be ready for Friday. James would be in more doubt. Seamus has had picked up a knock. He'll be is precautionary. If he doesn't train tomorrow, he'll train Wednesday. So he'll be okay. Nobody's lying. And James has come over and we'll see how he is. He'll just take it on a day-to-day basis. He thinks that... he might be able to make it. That would be great if he can. If he doesn't, well, we'll just have to do without him. Wes is out, yeah, definitely out. We've got the news through in the scan this morning, and obviously not great for us, not great for him, and not great for his club.
So that is the situation. So Clark and Duffy being out, very bad to lose those two. And then all the midfielders, Arthur, McCarthy, Wes, Brady suspended.
Yeah.
He's actually going to have to juggle things around here more than he would have ever thought even just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, you're reliant then probably on our experienced players. We'll be more so reliant on the likes of Glenn Whelan, John O'Shea, would imagine as well. We'll be coming in. So up front, I think we're okay.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're okay. Aidan McGeady's in good form as well. That's a real plus for Martin O'Neill.
Yeah.
James McLean has spoke about back in the West Brom team. So we've got...
Walters has scored 3 and 7.
Walters, in form. Shane Long, again, he's getting a bit of game time. His goal scoring record has certainly improved in the last month or two. So, we've got positives up front. It's just that midfield where we would have really loved to have seen McCarthy and Arter with the legs and the energy and Wes Hoolan and all these lads. It would have been great. But Hendrick as well, of course, he'll be another one that will be key for us. Yeah.
We'll have Jeff Hendrick on the show tomorrow.
Yeah.
On the football show, myself and Kev will be chatting to Jeff Hendrick tomorrow. So we'll obviously preview this game closer to Friday.
Off the Ball.
Home of live Premier League every Sunday from midday.
On News Talk 106 to 108.
They win because keep us alive in the fourth position race. If we don't win this match today, we lose the chance in relation to Arsenal defeat. We lose the chance in relation to Man City, Liverpool, what is going to happen. Somebody is going to lose points. So it was very important to keep us alive. Do I prefer finish fourth or win the Europa League? I prefer to win the Europa League, because Europa League give us the same, give us Champions League football, but give us a trophy, give us prestige, but maybe we don't win Europa League. So we have to fight until we can to try to finish fourth, and was what we did today, without many players, but with a great dancer in terms of attitude and desire from all the boys.
That was Jose. What about the logic behind going three at the back, and Pat even talking about them playing a 6-2-2 at times when they have to? Is he looking at the likes of Valencia and
probably personnel as well? Yeah, the personnel that's within the squad. Perhaps,
I'm thinking that
as well.
Kind of works.
Yeah, I mean Valencia is very suited to that.
Yeah,
wing back role, isn't he?
Was it Ashley Young on the other one?
Ashley Young played left wing back. Yeah,
you can see how that works.
Yeah, and he's got the stability. He can get Bailly back into the side with Jones and Smalling. So yeah. they've got that stability there as well with three decent defenders, you would say, more so than anything. Not necessarily great on the ball, but certainly good defenders, yeah.
Yeah. He's done an interview with France Football magazine, Jose, this week, and some of the quotes, it looks like it's a pretty interesting interview. He refers to himself in the third person, which I, you know, can't get on board with. But Mourinho, the man, tries to be the opposite of what the manager is. He tries to be discreet and calm to find a way to disconnect. I can go home and not watch a football match, not think about football. I can do that. At the start of my career, I couldn't. I was switched on 24 hours a day, had to find a kind of maturity. Today, I feel like I'm comfortable with my personality as a man. I've matured, I'm more at peace. A win no longer represents the moon to me, and a defeat no longer means hell.
Mm.
There you go. And I think I can transmit that serenity to the people who work with me, players.
You can see the mentality, can't you, as well? As you get older, most coaches and managers would start to realise that, come on, what is it all for? Yeah. Why do I need to be so upset? And you can probably see it in certain managers. You can probably see it in Klopp. You can see it in Guardiola. You can see it in certain managers, particularly young managers. Eddie Howe would be another one as well. That's just constantly
tuned in
constantly. But yeah, I think it is very important that you do actually have that time where you can actually step away from it and do whatever.
I mean, okay, there are tons of examples where he's been out of order, but he has been a little bit more serene, I would say, in this past year.
Do you think?
A lot calmer in a lot of press conferences.
I don't know.
He's still blowing up and doing his
calm,
thing.
Calm in press conferences, but I think there's always that edge within us. I think more so. I actually think more so the edge. I do. I think I've seen that edge a little bit more. I think it's almost a little bit, he's trying to play off a sarcasm as Man United manager.
Maybe.
But I do think it's still there as much as ever. Yeah.
Now that you're talking, I've said this like the week after he's gone on about this fixtures nonsense.
I do.
I take it all back.
That's what I feel, yeah.
We'll have a look at that France Football magazine interview in a bit of depth. If there's anything else in it, we'll chat about it tomorrow. So we've Jeff Hendrick on the show tomorrow and more besides.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.